Dial M for movies.
Graeme Shirley is the National Film and Sound Archive historian whose roles have included, amongst many things, I'm sure, tracking down Australia's lost films. Graeme, do you have an idea of what percentage of Australian films are lost?
Well, certainly for the silent era, this is a statistic that we share with the American film industry. 90% of output is lost. So, in other words, 90% of actuality, including documentary films and feature films and all kinds of production, are actually lost. That's very largely due to the fact that those films, the commercially made films, were produced on highly inflammable, easily perishable nitrate stock. And a lot of those, particularly if they've been stored in warmer regions or tropical areas, have not had a very long lifespan. That said, nitrate film, if it's properly housed and properly conserved under ideal temperature and humidity conditions, can last indefinitely. That really accounts for the loss of a huge amount of Australian and international film history.
And when we say they're lost, do we mean that they're completely lost? There's not even any partial remnants of scenes or images?
Look, from time to time there are partial remnants of scenes and images. I mean, there's a film from the 1930s called The Burgomaster, which was an adaptation of a famous stage play. And I think it was the second version that had been produced in Australia. The first version produced around 1911 is completely lost. The version that was made by Harry Southwell in Sydney in the 1930s only survives as an individual sequence. Raymond Longford's film, The Pioneers from the mid-1920s, survives only as one sequence, the opening sequence. For a long time, Norman Dorn's first Australian talkie, or one of the first Australian talkies, Showgirl's Luck, existed only as a trailer. Fairly miraculously, about 20, 25 years ago, the complete film was found, which is quite an interesting find in its own right to indicate what form the eventual film had taken. Relative to all kinds of things of the era, such as the constraints of early sound production, a very tight budget, original filmmakers' ambitions versus what eventually reached the screen, and it was quite a revealing film from all of those points of view.
Graeme, is it right to say that they're actually lost, or is it possible that they're actually just housed in other archives around the world that we don't know about?
Look, that's a really good question, because in a number of cases they're likely to be. There was a production company that was set up in the late 1910s, early 1920s by E.J. Carroll in Sydney, and he produced films with both Snowy Baker, the Olympic superstar come athletic all-rounder come film star, and also produced films with Raymond Longford. And a number of those films were known to have been released in the 1920s. And they included Raymond Longford's apparently quite masterly The Blue Mountains Mystery, which is a lost film. A systematic search through the many and varied American film archives has not happened yet for those particular films, but at some stage should happen. It's very likely that a number of Australian films that were released in Britain from Story of the Kelly Gang onwards in 1906 through to certainly the 1930s that are lost films, or even the 1940s that are lost films, are somewhere in Britain, either in a proper archive or in a private collection somewhere. So the private collector network is diminishing. A lot of the collectors who collected nitrate film when nitrate film was still around, of course, shuffling off the model coil. It's very rare that their collections get passed on to anyone else. A lot of collectors leave behind the instruction that, when they die, they want their collections destroyed, and in a number of cases, they have been destroyed. That said, some important collections have come to the National Film and Sound Archive over the years, and they've included the Harry Davidson collection and the Roger McKenzie collection. They were two very conscientious collectors who collected some real gems. Roger McKenzie, for instance, collected the only surviving reel of the McDonough sisters' first film made in the mid-1920s, Those Who Love. When I say reel, it's more like a shop window sequence of highlights from parts of the film. Giorgio Manganelli's first film, Unwanted, is lost. That was a film. It was his second film. It was the first of a series of short films he made in the late 1950s, early 60s. Charles Chauvel's quite interesting World War II film, Russia Aflame, is a lost film, even though it was screened very widely in Australia during World War II and was apparently packed an emotional punch for audiences.
When you locate an actual film that's lost, do you find that you normally locate it in entirety or only in segments?
Look, it depends. For instance, as part of stage one of Australia's lost film Search and Rescue, I contacted Jim Sharman trying to find out whether he knew where the negative and duping materials for Shirley Thompson versus the Aliens was held. He didn't specifically know, and in fact we still haven't tracked down that film. The last he heard of it, it was in a laboratory somewhere, but that particular laboratory's entire holdings came to us at a given point in time, and it wasn't among them. But what did come out of the conversation with Jim was the director's cut of the film, which was the very original version that he'd not wanted to show beyond its initial screening at the Sydney Film Festival. So the director's cut of Shirley Thompson versus the Aliens in print form only has come to us. Also, as a result of Australia's Lost Film Search and Rescue, we've tracked down a previously lost feature film called Stockade, which was about Eureka Stockade. It was based on a stage musical by Kenneth Cook, who was also the author of Wake and Fright. We've not retrieved the original materials for that, but we certainly have a print. All of the original materials... We've got portions of what were all of the original materials, but there are still aspects of that film that are still missing. But at least we've got a complete print of that particular film. One of them, of course, which we publicised quite highly last year in 2010, was Captain Thunderbolt, where we have a 16mm condensed print of the original version, and we've only recently discovered within our own collection a 35mm trailer. And we've actually put the 35mm trailer up online as part of the Australia's Lost Films page, so people can play that trailer. It's a very good quality, and when we ran a session at the Sydney Film Festival last year, I compared the quality of that trailer with equivalent scenes from the 16mm print, and it was like the difference between chalk and cheese.
Do you yourself have a holy grail of a film you'd love to be found?
I would look more in terms of the output of early Australian filmmakers. I'd love to see all the lost films made by Raymond Longford during the silent period turn up. I'd love to see all the lost films made by Franklin Barrett and Beaumont Smith during the silent era turn up. They were the three key directors. Charles Chauvel came in as a director at the end of the silent period. His two silent films partially exist, so I'd love to see complete versions of Charles Chauvel's two silent films, Greenhide and Moth of Moonby, turn up. But among the Longford films, the substantial films that are missing include Australia Calls, which he made in 1912, which prophesied the fairly unspecified Asiatic invasion of Australia. It was a real kind of white Australia policy film of its day, which would be a fascinating social document, but it was also apparently quite a spectacular film, which foretold the destruction of Sydney and had very impressive special effects to that effect. Raymond Longford's Fisher's Ghost was Raymond Longford's own personal favourite among the films he directed, among the almost 30 films he directed. Apparently that's an interesting combination of dramatised documentary and feature film, which was shot on the actual locations in which the real-life Fisher's Ghost story took place in Campbelltown, and those locations would no longer exist in the form in which they existed in the 1920s. Also Longford's The Blue Mountains Mystery. Franklin Barrett's Know Thy Child, which was about illegitimacy, is a substantial loss. Franklin Barrett is an interesting case in point, because he, into his old age, actually kept all of his films in a garage in Randwick in Sydney. The garage collapsed one night, and the fire brigade came round to investigate and said, send everything to the tip. So everything was sent to the tip, And so the Franklin Barrett films that we do hold, which is A Girl of the Bush and The Breaking of the Drought, and fragments of other films that he shot for other people, have come to us through other sources, primarily through private collectors.
Would it be right to say that films made from the 1980s onwards would never be lost? Have we sort of stopped the hemorrhage, so to speak?
No, it's not correct, really, because...
So films can still be lost that are made...
Filmmakers who are making films in the entirely digital medium today, and I mean particularly short filmmakers or low-budget feature filmmakers, will occasionally approach us or be approached by us and say, you know, all I've got is the DVD. Will that do for long-term preservation? Well, not necessarily. DVD is you know, what I'd define as a fairly crumbly medium over time. And these same filmmakers have actually wiped the hard drives which contained their films in the first place. I mean, there can't be too many of them that are that uninformed, but there are a number of them that think that all we want for long-term preservation, you know, into the far distant future, is a DVD. But you know, what we really want is access to their original drives and their original files on their hard drive, so we can preserve them to the best of our ability and do justice to the original viewing experience.
I was at Melbourne International Film Festival last year when, in conjunction, I think, with the National Film and Sound Archive, they screened films from 1897, including like the Melbourne Cup that was filmed down here and.
That's 1896, actually. They were the films shot by
Maurice Sestier.
Yes.
So that was an absolute fascinating experience watching them with a live accompaniment and narration. So yeah, I'm just intrigued. How did they survive?
That was a great find. Yeah. Well, that was a great find. And in fact, I remember when I worked at Film Australia in the late 1970s on a documentary called Now You're Talking, which was about Australian cinema in the 1930s, so I looked back through the files for The Pictures That Moved and The Passionate Industry, which were the films that Alan Anderson and Joan Long had made on Australian cinema from 1896 through to 1930. And the file on how the Melbourne Cup footage was tracked down was fascinating because there was a lot of correspondence backwards and forwards to the Cinémathèque Française about getting the film out to Australia. And I thought to myself at the time, and since then, it's pretty extraordinary that nobody at that time at Film Australia or elsewhere asked the French whether there were other films that Sestier had shot that survived. So the archive, we had a French intern in 2006 called Coralie Martin from France. She did a bit of detective work, you know, using her obvious French language skills, and wrote to people in France and sent them emails and made phone calls and so on and so forth, and provided us with a paper trail which indicated that a couple of other films had survived. One of them was the film that Sally Jackson, one of the NFSA staff here in Canberra, was able to identify as Le Patineur Grotesque. And the other one was an additional sequence from the Melbourne Cup film, which had not come to us in the first place. So that's the kind of detective work that often needs to be done to track things down. The same kind of detective work that the producer Tony Buckley did on Wake in Fright, in terms of tracking down the original negative and other preservation materials, which were marked for destruction in a skip bin in the United States by the time they were found.
Well, I'm guessing there's a lot of dead ends when searching for lost films. I had this vision that maybe you had the deer stalker on and the magnifying glass searching through old warehouses of films, but that's probably not the case.
Well, warehouses is one part of it, but quite often people running warehouses or running laboratories who have what we now call analog collections, as opposed to, you know, rapid, massively condensed digital collections. Yeah. The analog collection people will often get onto us to say, look, we're downsizing or we're going entirely digital. Would you like our analog collection? And that's quite often in places as diverse as London and Sydney and you know, Los Angeles. That's quite often when we hear from people who say, would you like the negatives and you know, the sound negatives of this, that and the other Australian features or documentaries or even short films? And we say, yes, of course. We don't say yes to everything, but certainly we say yes to every Australian feature that's been produced. and major documentaries, major and significant documentaries, and significant short films. And I'm talking about the full span of Australian film history. I'm talking about 1896, right up until now. One of the NFSA board members was telling me recently about Australian features that get produced purely for the internet, and that's the domain they live on. The informed or any people that get to hear about them through social media or just browsing the internet will get to find them, but we won't necessarily know about them unless we've read about them in Encore or Encore Directory, unless somebody's told us about them, or unless a filmmaker is proactive enough to contact us. But otherwise, we do have agreements with Screen Australia and with a couple of state governments on what we call deliverables, so that if those agencies are the major investor in certain films, be they television, feature films, documentaries, short films, they will then ensure that the filmmaker sends us initially a viewing copy and then ultimately the preservation materials.
Right.
So in the absence of federal compulsory deposit, the kind of thing that exists for books, that's the next best thing for us to actually take delivery of films and television programs.
So in closing, if there is someone who happens to think that they have on their shelf a film that may be of importance to the archive, what's the steps that they need to do?
Look, go on to either phone the National Film and Sound Archive in the various state capitals. We've got large offices in Sydney and Melbourne, and we've certainly got our headquarters in Canberra, and the number is 6248 2000. We've also got up online on our website on nfsa.gov.au. We've got a collection offers form. We don't say yes, for instance, to every collection. We don't say yes to every home movie collection or every home movie. We like people who are offering us material to do the necessary homework to provide us with as much information as possible. I mean, if they're approaching us with a lost feature film, yes, of course we'll say, yep, absolutely, definitely. Or even if it's a film that we have where they've found an additional print, or they've found the negative, or they've found duping materials, we'd still like to know about it. So there are people on staff that can deal with this. Our reception staff can deal with this.
And one last question. The film The True Story of the Kelly Gang, which has been released on DVD.
What we're talking about there is the story of the Kelly Gang. The True Story of the Kelly Gang was the re-release by, or was not a re-release, but the True Story of the Kelly Gang was a later version made by Harry Southwell. Yes, sorry, we're talking about the story of the Kelly Gang made by Charles Tate in 1906.
Yes, is that complete?
No, it's not. We've only got approximately a quarter of the original running time. Estimates vary as to what the original running time was. Those estimates vary anywhere between 40 and 60 minutes. And so the definition of feature film has to be understood. How a feature film was defined in the early days is very different to the way a feature film was defined even after 1910-11. So we've got, we've edited together in 2006-07 the surviving fragments, and one of those fragments was found by Sally Jackson online by looking at the Treasures database for the International Federation of Film Archives, and found that the BFI in London had to have a new sequence. And when one of our staff went over there and viewed the sequence, yes, it turned out to be a brand new sequence, an additional 7 minutes we'd not had previously.
So, Graeme, is there not just a central database that all museums can tap into and archives that have a reference of each other's archives?
Yes, no, there's not. The closest equivalent is the International Federation of Film Archives, also known as FIAF, who have their own internal database which member archives can actually access to find out who holds what nitrate films. But when it comes to an average punter trying to find out what the National Film and Television Archive of the British Film Institute in England has, for instance, they really have to approach them.
Right.
The National Film and Sound Archive is one of the very few archives in the world which has an online database of our holdings.
Yeah.
The New Zealand Film Archive also has an equivalent, and a number of others do, but a number of really major archives elsewhere don't. So it's quite often a matter of just approaching approaching those archives to say, do you have such and such, and then waiting for the answer.
Well, Graeme, thank you for your time. And all I guess I can say is happy hunting.
Right, thank you, Rick.
And keep looking, and we'll keep looking as well, and you never know what may come up.
All right, thank you very much.
Thanks for your time.